I'm Callie Crossy. This is Boston Public Radio. You'll recognize the fabulous theme by John Williams from the Superman movies. Long before it was cool to be a nerd, Jerry Siegel, a shy, awkward kid living in Cleveland, channels sleepless summer nights and an unfulfilled yearning for girls into the epic superhero of our time, Superman. Joining me to talk through the origin, history, and significance of Superman is Larry Tye. His new book is Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. Larry Tye, welcome back.
Great to be back with you.
So I was fascinated by this book, as many have been. It's really a wonderful book because, of course, it all started with your fascination with Superman. So tell everybody about why you, as a kid, were just so drawn to this particular superhero.
Because I think when I looked in the mirror, instead of seeing Superman, I saw Clark Kent, a nerdy-looking Clark Kent, and I wanted everybody to believe that deep within, if they had the right kind of eyes to look and see, that they would see a Superman. And he was a hero that we could all look and see something better than we saw when we looked in the mirror.
And the other history that's fascinating, aside from your personal one, is, of course, the two guys that came up with Superman couldn't be more polar opposite than the character they created. Tell us about the creators of Superman.
So we've got to understand who they are. We've got to go back to the early 1930s and to a section of Cleveland, Ohio called Glenville. And this was an area that was all poor and 98% Jewish. And these were two kids who were consummate nerds. And every day, we know from his unpublished memoir that we just uncovered as part of this book, every day Jerry Siegel would go out on the playground and kids would taunt him. They would yell, "Siegel, Siegel, birds of an eagle." And I'm not sure just what that meant, but what it meant was that the girls were watching and that he wanted to fly away. And he couldn't really fly away, so every night when he went to bed, he brought with him a pencil and a pad of paper. And he came up with this hero. His first hero was called The Super-Man. And it wasn't a good guy. It was somebody who could fight back at his enemies by basically taking over the world. And it was Jerry's very childish but totally understandable reaction to what was going on with him. And his notion of who the hero ought to be became clarified when he turned 17. And shortly after that, one day at his dad's used clothing store in a rundown part of Cleveland, three guys walk in and they try on a suit and they walk out without paying. And Michael Siegel runs after them and he has a massive heart attack and he basically drops dead right there. And Jerry, as the youngest of six kids of Lithuanian refugees, is suddenly bereft. He's lost his dad, he's lost his mentor, he has lost his hero. And shortly afterwards, when he goes to bed that night and he has his pen and pad of paper, he dreams up a slightly different Superman. Gone is the. Gone is the hyphen, and gone is the bad guy act. And this new hero, in his first writing of it and in his buddy Joe Shuster's first artist rendering of it, is not coincidentally flying in to save a guy who looks a whole lot like Michael Siegel, who is being robbed. And this was Jerry doing what he couldn't do in reality and creating the kind of hero that he needed and that lots of kids needed in that era.
One of the things that your book stresses is the core of the Superman character is about right and wrong. We've heard the other stuff about, you know, truth and the American way, and we can get to that. But the essence of what he was doing in that change that began at 17 years old was to find somebody who was very clear about what was right and what was wrong.
And America at that moment needed exactly the clarity that you're talking about. There may never have been a more perfect coincidence in the history of publishing than the hero Jerry Siegel imagined in 1938 and a hero that America needed when it was mired in the Great Depression and on the eve of World War II. We didn't want dark heroes. We didn't want fraught heroes. We wanted exactly what you said. We wanted a Dudley Do-Right. Here's what's right and here's what's wrong. And that's what Superman was.
Another theme that is all through your book is the timing, the period. Now, we're talking right now about Superman coming into being at this time during the Depression, thinking about the war, what is right and wrong. But as we see throughout the evolution of Superman in various television series, movies, whatever, it seems to me that the country is as you say, mired in some great event that we then want to go back to a superhero, a Superman.
Exactly. I say that Superman evolved more than the fruit fly. In the 1930s, he was the consummate New Deal liberal. He went after slumlords and wife beaters and robber barons. In the 1940s, when we went to war, Superman helped take us to war. He was there in the home front protecting us against saboteurs. He was what the military used when they were trying to have a bond drive or trying to teach illiterate young soldiers how to read. In the 1950s, the great worry was the Red Menace, and Superman went after the Red Menace. Every era, he changed his politics, he changed his hairstyle, he even changed his job. He at one point went from being a newspaper reporter to being a TV reporter. He evolved to keep contemporary with the times, but that evolution wouldn't have worked if he hadn't done what you said a few minutes ago, which is had that clear sense of right and wrong, and that never changed.
Let's get back to the creators of Superman as even as he was evolving. The core of it was put together by these two guys from Cleveland. I never knew or thought about whether or not Superman would be Jewish. You've got a great quote in the book, a last rule of thumb: when a name ends in man, the bearer is Jewish, superhero, or both. Talk to us about Superman being Jewish.
Well, so every religious group wanted to adopt him as theirs. He was this consummate figure from popular culture. He was all American. So Christians saw him as the perfect Christ story. God sends his son to earth to show mankind it can be better than it thought it could be. Buddhists saw him as the perfect Zen hero. To atheists and agnostics, who needed religion, he was the perfect secular messiah. But I think it was Jews who had the strongest claim on him. And I think this is Jerry and Joe playing a little joke on all of us. When he came down from the planet Krypton, his name up there was Kal-El, which your listeners will recognize if they know Hebrew as meaning the all-embracing or the vessel of God. He was he had parents who in Krypton were trying to save him, and instead of floating him out in a river, they floated him out in space. And he was adopted by two of the most Gentile people you can ever imagine, John and Martha Kent, in the middle of Middle America. The Moses story, the story of Exodus. But as you say, the ultimate proof, it was not Superman, it was Superman.
Oh, okay. Well, I think it's fair to say that for a number of people, you know, people were into the comics as you were. You were enjoying Superman early on and embracing that. But I think that when it moved to television, to another evolution of Superman, then you drew in a whole other audience in addition to the ones that, and it also concretized, I think, who Superman was in a way. So, of course, we have to hear the line from the famous 50s series, The Adventures of Superman, the television series. Here it is.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
You know, that was exciting to a lot of kids. A whole generation were stamped with, you know, that image of who Superman was. And really, everybody that came after that had to sort of begin there to make their own invention or reinvention of Superman.
That's true. And when I close my eyes, I still see George Reeves there. And when you think back to who he was, he was the actor in the series, and he was the guy who looked exactly the same as Superman and Clark Kent. He was the guy who tried to convince us he could fly by jumping on a trampoline and then being held up in the air, sort of wiggling around a little bit on an enormous crane. He was the guy who, on the one hand, bullets would bounce off of him, and yet when they threw a gun at him, he had to duck. He was the guy that we wanted to believe in so much that we would forgive all of those things. He was our first visualization of what Superman really could look like.
Now, there are many tidbits that are fascinating in your book, which is called Superman, the High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. And I'm talking with Larry Tye, the author of this cultural bio. But I think what was it always interesting to people is when the creators are putting together these heroes, do any of their personal attributes come into play? So the fact that he could see through buildings, and then one of his creators had very poor eyesight.
Exactly. All kinds of things suggest that these were the two kids who had invented him, and they put their personal mark on it. It was not just that he could see through buildings, but in World War II, when DC Comics was trying to figure out how not to send Superman off to war, because he would insult our troops, he could in 15 seconds end the war. They came up with a scheme where Clark Kent went in for his induction exam, and he's looking straight ahead at the eye chart on the wall. But instead of on the wall in front of him, he's actually looking two examining rooms in. So, of course, he's reading off the wrong letters, and he fails. And that is the perfect excuse for why Clark Kent and Superman couldn't go off to war. And yet they kept him on the home front. He protected us against saboteurs, and he was part of our war bond drives. So Jerry Siegel was the perfect example of why Superman needed a Clark Kent and a Superman. When Jerry Siegel looked in the mirror, he saw Superman. Everybody who looked at Jerry Siegel saw a nerdy-looking Clark Kent. And I think it was these kids' sense of who they were and who they wanted to be that gave us the precise vision of the character that we ended up with.
Now, of course, what touches my heart is, lovelornness for a particular young woman who eventually becomes Lois Lane.
It is the only place, I think, in American popular culture where we had a brilliant love triangle that only really involved two people. And it was the perfect. It had something for everybody. The girl who yearned for the guy who didn't yearn for her, the guy who wanted the girl and couldn't get the girl, and the other guy who basically could have had anything he wanted and didn't seem to want anything. And it was just an extraordinary love triangle that they played with it over the years. They tried to have Superman marry Lois or Clark marry Lois. The best thing was when everybody didn't quite get what they wanted.
Here's a clip from the first episode of The Adventures of Superman. Again, this is 1952. And here's a discussion with Lois Lane.
The reason that I'd want to do something like Superman 4 is to offer up for children as a fun entertainment which has an actual character at the center of it, that has a character who's caring, who loves people.
There are one or two things I haven't got quite straight in my mind, Mr. Kent. For example, how did you leave here later than we did and beat us to the airport?
Is that all?
Not quite. How come you found the man behind the hangar at just the right moment to get his exclusive story when every top experienced reporter in the business was breaking his neck?
Or her neck.
Or her neck to get that story.
Maybe I'm a Superman, Miss Lane.
I love that clip. That's a great one. But that leads me to allowing people who are maybe hearing those clips for the first time and thinking, wow, that was, I never heard that. That my Superman is Christopher Reeves. That's the one I know. Or even beyond that. March us through the evolution from that, the comics to the series to the films to the re-envisioning and several other television shows.
Sure. So every new popular form of popular culture in America, Superman managed to become a star in. He starts out in comic books. Then he goes to the even more popular form of comic strips, and he almost overnight is in hundreds of newspapers and then thousands across the country. When the first cartoons came out, Superman was the star of the cartoons. He got his own radio show, which launched right to the top of the radio world. He was the most successful TV series of his era. He took us to movies. He took us to the horrible serials, those shortcuts that were there when you went to, as a kid, the Saturday matinee. He got us into novels and graphic novels, and he was there throughout the media. And if I could say one thing about Lois Lane, I just had an extraordinary experience. We launched this book in a little town in the middle of Illinois called Metropolis, Illinois, where they have an annual Superman festival. And so I go in for my big talk into a room that's only a third full. And suddenly, in the first 5 minutes of the talk, this ancient woman is escorted into the room. And within about 3 minutes after she comes in, the room is full. People are texting, people are making cell phone calls, and the woman is Noelle Neal.
Oh, wow.
The star of the first TV serial, and for all but 1 year of the original Adventures of Superman. And what Noelle Neal is extraordinary for is not just that she played Lois Lane, but she said over the years she had young women coming up to her all across America saying at a moment when they had no role models of a strong, successful, professional woman, Lois was there. It was Clark who was a buffoon and Lois who was getting a story.
That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, she was definitely a model for Girl Friday and everybody else that came after. That's quite amazing. But the Superman, as you were saying, was revised into a couple of other television shows. One I knew about but really didn't watch was Smallville. I thought that was a very interesting series that was on the WB network and went back to the adolescence of Superman to explore that.
And what was interesting about Smallville to me, selfishly what was interesting, is that I worried when I started my book, is it only people like you and I who had these historic memories of him, or was a current generation of young people being exposed to Superman? And for 9 successful seasons, the answer was definitively yes. It was a Superman that was trying to basically play out the kinds of experiences that teenagers could relate to before he knew that he was a Superman, before the world knew. It was something that the producers initially said, no flights, no tights, meaning that we were going to look at a young Clark Kent coming to maturity and all the angst and other things, the kinds of things that we normally associate with Peter Parker and Spider-Man, Superman experienced as well.
And so that just, and by the way, the most of the audience for that show were not at all familiar with, you know, they had moved on to other heroes. So how do you explain Superman's ongoing, you know, the enthusiasm for him in various generations as we march across time? Because, you know, the kids have moved on to the Avengers, to the, you know, the Transformers, name it. There's other stuff going on.
I explain the success as experienced through the Smallville show, which was, it was young kids who, as you say, hadn't experienced the old lore of Superman, but they weren't watching it alone. They were watching it with their parents and grandparents. It was a wonderful bonding experience the producers found. And I think that as much as dark heroes like Batman, who sort of starts out with the notion of revenge, and fraught heroes like Spider-Man, who has more anxieties than you can fit into a room, as much as they have an appeal, I think all of us, particularly at difficult times like we're going through now, still want a hero who suggests what you said at the very beginning, which is the clear delineation between right and wrong. It may seem like Dudley Do-Right, and it may seem sort of innocent and childlike, but that's something we all yearn for. And I suggest that as much as these other heroes have their moment, the one who keeps coming back, and it will take us till next summer when he has his new blockbuster movie, but it is the Man of Steel that we keep going back to.
And I should point out, because we're talking about, I just was fascinated by the timing of every time Superman seems to come back in another way, that Smallville happened after 2001.
It was not accidental, I think, that we were going through a period of questioning, we were going through a sense of anxiety, and Superman came back in a form that seemed to play perfectly to his era. It was what we said at the beginning. He was perfectly tuned in to what a new era needed, and yet he maintained enough consistency that people who had loved him through the years still saw him as their Superman.
Well, we have an interesting clip from Christopher Reeve. For a lot of people, they didn't know George Reeves, who was in the original television series, but they knew Christopher Reeve, who was in 4 Superman films. And he felt very strongly about the character. And here's a clip of Christopher Reeve talking about the character of Superman.
The reason that I'd want to do something like Superman 4 is to offer up for children as a fun entertainment which has an actual character at the center of it, that has a character who's caring, who loves people, who's considerate, who's a gentleman, as a possible antidote to the Rambos and the Chuck Norrises and the Schwarzeneggers and these. I mean, I think all of those are comic books, as a matter of fact. Rambo is more of a comic book figure than Superman is, in my mind.
It's pretty interesting.
It is pretty interesting. And Christopher Reeve, initially, he was a Juilliard-trained actor who was intending to do really serious stuff. And he found himself playing Superman, and it was initially disconcerting to him. And I think he worried about being typecast. But by the end of his four movies, he understood the essence of Superman, and when he really understood it is when he had his accident, when he was thrown from the horse and basically broke his neck and came back, and he said that was the moment that he understood just what Superman meant to people, and he could use this character of Superman to rally support for stem cell research, for people with spinal cord injuries, for causes bigger than himself.
And we should mention that he was a guest star on Smallville, just to close that circle. My guest is Larry Tye. His new book is Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. Now, of course, what happened to Christopher Reeves, the actor who was in those films, the big feature films, was tragic. But so many other mishaps of a sort have happened to people associated with the playing the character, writing about the character, whatever. It's called the Superman Curse. Let's talk about that, if you will.
So the start of the Superman Curse was when George Reeves, the guy who played in The Adventures of Superman back in the 1950s, this was a guy who, again, had started out having great aspirations of his success in movies. He was in Gone with the Wind. He was one of the Tarleton twins. And he envisioned doing more movies like that. And instead, he ended up as Superman. And in 1959, when they were about to start filming a new season, one day we all wake up, and there's a headline in the newspaper that seemed like a contradiction in terms. Superman commits suicide. Now, first, that seemed unlikely enough. And secondly, to kids like me, it seemed physically impossible. He could shoot himself, but what? It wouldn't have any effect. It'd bounce off. Well, in fact, what had happened is this actor, for all the fact that there are more conspiracy theories about what happened to George Reeves than there are about John Kennedy, what I think happened was a combination of pain-killing pills he was on for accidents he had been in, drinking too much, and worrying about being typecast. One day, one night, he took out a gun from the desk next to his bed, and he killed himself. And that was the beginning of the curse. And it seemed like everybody who played Superman from then on, anytime they had something bad happen to them, which was often, they called it the Superman curse. And the two most dramatic were George, and then 20 years later, Christopher and him having the accident. But there were lots of things in between.
Yeah, in between, the people are falling downstairs and stuff is dropping on them, and they're, you know, I mean, it's really kind of eerie to think about. So in a time where we argue about what is American, Superman, not for one second, it seems to me, that his Americanness was questioned. Or was he?
Well, so Superman started out with Truth and Justice, and the American way came a little bit late in terms of the jingle there. And I think that there are lots of interesting debates that have gone on over the years. When the 2006 movie with Brandon Routh and Bryan Singer directing it came out, and he made some sort of a joke, Superman, in the movie about who really needs the American way. And a lot of people were up in arms. Bill O'Reilly, particularly, it became a cause for him, and the idea that how were we suddenly dropping the American way. And I think Superman over the years has suggested different notions of patriotism to different people. It became controversial again within the last year when Superman looked like he was renouncing his American citizenship to take on a global citizenship. And I would argue that Superman has always been a global hero. I thought when I put out requests when I was starting the book for fans to write in and tell me their stories, and I put them out over the internet, I thought I'd get stories from the Midwest and maybe from California and Boston, and instead I got them from Paris, I got them from Buenos Aires, I got them from across Africa and Asia. Superman is a global hero. The guy who made Superman fly in the Christopher Reeves movie told me the story about growing up in Serbia. And reading Superman translated into Serbian as a kid. He was out there. He was out there in 50-plus languages. And if we want to reserve him as purely American, we can try to do that. But the rest of the world adopted him a long time ago.
So we have to talk about what happened to the guys that came up with Superman. the ones who drew him, who imagined him, who wrote about him, who fantasized Lois Lane as, you know, some great love of theirs, all of this stuff, in the end, really got messed over.
They did. They got messed over in the beginning when what I call the original sin of comic books happened, and that was in 1938 when Jerry and Joe sold their Superman story to DC Comics for a grand total for the two of them of $130. And that wasn't for one story. That was for Superman Forever. That was the bad news. The good news for them was in their first 10 years working for DC Comics, they made a grand total, in today's terms, of $5 million that was shared between them. Mm. They became wealthy. They became famous. Their Superman was out there. Part of their story is tragic, and part of it is a success story. But over the years, Jerry and Joe sued three or four times to try to reclaim the rights. And today we have an ongoing lawsuit that will be decided soon whether the heirs to Siegel and Schuster will get back the rights to all or part of Superman.
Well, you buried the lead, Larry. How much did they get for that character initially?
It was that $130 that they got initially, and today the character has generated billions of dollars, and this lawsuit almost will, as a given, give them tens of millions of dollars, these heirs, and could give them a lot more. What I think we need, though, is a judge with the wisdom of Solomon who understands if you give part of the character to the heirs and part to Time Warner, that you've torn him apart and ruined him. And they've got to figure out a way, before the suit is ever decided, of coming to some settlement.
Yeah, that's going to be... And is it something that has to be resolved before this new blockbuster is scheduled to come out next year?
They're praying that it's resolved because they want this blockbuster to be the beginning of a new series of Superman movies.
So let's talk about the first really leap into feature films for Superman. I was fascinated to know that the guy who made it happen, once again, had no clue, wasn't interested in Superman, didn't know anything about it, and yet it was under his direction that it came to be.
He was an extraordinary guy named Alex Salkind, and one day in a Paris cafe, his son says to him, Salkind was a very famous producer, and his son says to him, our next big movie has to be Superman, and he says basically, who is that? He may have been the only person on the planet who didn't know who Superman was, and yet he gave us this brilliant series of movies taking Superman, not just taking him to the big screen, but as the marketing line for the movie said, you will believe a man can fly, and it's the first time I believed it.
And now, of course, we're at a time when you can really do a lot with effects. So the bar is rising ever. Thus, the 2006 movie with the new Superman post Christopher Reeve was pretty impressive, I thought.
I thought it was extraordinary, and it made $600 million. The bad news was it cost about $500 million to make, and that was not enough for Warner Brothers and for Time Warner. So goodbye, Brandon Routh. Hello, a new Superman star who is British, who's going to come out next summer. It's extraordinary. He's British.
With the accent or no? No.
With the accent, but he's got to remove the accent. The accent's got to go, certainly, before he comes on screen as Superman.
Okay, I'm startled by this. Why British?
That's a great question. With all the American actors who would love to do this, this is a guy named Henry, and I'm probably going to mispronounce his last name, but it's C-A-V-I-L-L. Mm. He's a star of a cable show called The Tudors, and he is British. And what he's going to do, we'll wait and see. But the our all-American hero is now in the hands of a Brit.
It's not as simple as that he fits the suit, is it?
Not.
And do you have inside information to know if, by the way, if that suit is being re-envisioned? Or are we back to the red, white, and blue and the cape and the whole thing?
Honestly, I'm convinced that fans will dictate what happens these days. The hints that have dribbled out of that studio suggesting that the uniform's being re-envisioned, that the story's being re-envisioned, have prompted such a backlash that I think that Time Warner really wants a big success here, and they're not going to mess with things.
Now, I've shared some of the things that you talked about in the book, and it's a big book, so I haven't given away too much, but there's way more to know. I'm curious about, for you, Larry Tye, so involved in Superman, so much a part of your young life and still great interest as you grew into an adult. What just startled you as you're doing your research? What were you just stunned by?
So partly, I was totally taken in by the stories of Jerry and Joe, because these were the kids who represented every kid in America at that time and really tapped into something, from the love triangle to the idea that one of my favorite things is, for most superheroes, like Batman, the real person is Bruce Wayne, and he's disguised as Batman. Peter Parker is the real guy, and he's disguised as Spider-Man. What is brilliant about Superman is the real guy is Superman, and Clark Kent, I think, is he's trying to be human and trying to make us relate to him. And the idea that he didn't have to put on a disguise, he didn't have to wear a mask, that there's something extraordinarily open and accessible about this guy, that writing this book did two things. One is it gave me an appreciation of why we as Americans embrace the heroes that we do. But most importantly, it let me be 10 years old again.
By the way, I want to share with people that you own a red cape.
How did you find out?
You got to talk about that. Why, Larry?
So I was a longtime journalist, and on the 10th year of a program I run that trains medical journalists, including some from this station, they gave me, because I was writing this book, a wonderful red cape that all 100 journalists signed. And I was foolish enough to put it on when USA Today was taking my picture and wanted me to wear the red cape.
So there you go. All right. So when you when people read this book, and you've already gotten a tremendous amount of response from people who are, you know, rechanneling their imaginations and following this cultural biography of Superman, you know, what would you hope that they would take away at the core?
So everybody, when they write a book, and particularly when they write a biography, they're partly telling the story of the person, the obvious story about Superman. To me, this is a story partly about popular culture in America as it evolved over 75 years. But most importantly, I was really interested after my last book on Satchel Paige in why America embraces the heroes that we do. And I think the Superman story says something profound. There are very few heroes, be they politicians, be they sports figures, who have lasted for 7 decades and counting. And I hope we all take away a sense that maybe a story about simple good and bad is something that still is at the core of who we are, not just as Americans, but as global citizens today.
I wonder if your other work that you've done about these sort of larger-than-life people, Satchel Paige, you just mentioned, Edward Bernays, pioneer in public relations, has a sort of superhero likeness around them, and therefore you are attracted to those subjects as a way of finally getting back to your heart's desire to write about Superman.
Absolutely. Perhaps the guys who were most attracted to me, the biggest heroes that I've ever written about, and guys who I think would have really appreciated the Superman story, are these elegant men who worked on the railroads for 100 years called Pullman Porters.
I know about them, yes.
Yes, and I think they got the idea of sort of what made America special, and I think that while they adored Satchel Paige, my guess is if I had ever taken the trouble to ask them, they would have said that Superman was right up there among their biggest and best heroes.
Okay, I got to know your favorite comic book rendition of Superman, and also your favorite rendition of Superman on TV, in the film, you know,
So comic book, I was a sucker in the 1960s when a guy named Mort Weisinger was in charge of the Superman franchise, and he came out with what he called imaginary stories. Things like Superman finally marrying Lois and see what it would look like, or Superman dying. The brilliant thing was that he had a great imagination, and the strange thing was that the idea that you would call an imaginary story something special about Superman, as if all the other stories weren't imaginary, was amazing. In terms of my favorite Superman, that's easy. I think all of our favorite Superman is the first one we grew to love. And when I close my eyes right now, it's George Reeves that I still see there.
Well, I want to share with people your last words of the book. It's a long book, but it's so entertaining because I just thought it was so beautifully put. The more that flesh and blood role models let us down, you write, the more we turn to fictional ones who stay true. With them, and especially with Superman, it is about the possibility of getting the girl, saving the world, or at least Lois and Jimmy, and having it our way. Our longest-lasting hero will endure as long as we need a champion, which should be until the end of time. That's great, Larry Tide. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That's Superman. We've been talking about Superman with Larry Tide. His new book is The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. Thank you. The idea of a doctor showing up on your doorstep with a doctor's bag in hand, ready to treat whatever ails you, probably sounds like something from another era. But a new initiative, part of the Affordable Care Act, is bringing this bygone way of practicing medicine into the future. We'll be talking to Representative Ed Markey and a doctor from BU Medical Center about this new program. I'm Callie Crossley. You're listening to Boston Public Radio on 89.7 WGBH.